You're listening to a podcast from the Employment, Pensions and Benefits team at McLeay, Murray and Spence. The issue we're looking at first is how employers can best deal with stress and mental health issues in the workplace. I'm joined by Chris Phillips, a partner in the employment team, and Carolyn Roberts of the Scottish Association for Mental Health. Carolyn, why is this such a difficult issue?
I think that stress and mental health problems more generally are a difficult issue for people to talk about, not just employers. I think that's partly because there is still a lot of fear and myths and misunderstanding. People think that if you develop a mental health problem, you're going to have it for the rest of your life. That's a very negative situation. And that's not the case. At the moment, recovery rates in Scotland are somewhere between 70 to 80%. One in four of us will experience a mental health problem at some point in our life. So it's really quite common. And I think that's why it's quite important that employers do feel able to deal with it.
Chris, how do employers go about recognising that there might be a problem?
The most common situation is where somebody is actually off work and has been signed off for a period of time, and the medical certificates start coming in with stress or depression or anxiety on them. And it's generally at that stage that an employer has to tackle the situation.
So how should employers deal with this issue?
Well, the first thing worth mentioning is that under the Health and Safety at Work Act, all employers are obliged to provide a safe and supportive working environment, and they should also be carrying out risk assessments in relation to things like work-related stress, which is as much a hazard as many other things, such as manual handling or working at heights. The other thing that an employer has to be particularly sensitive to is the possibility that somebody may have developed a mental impairment and may, in fact, be covered by the Disability Discrimination Act. So in that situation, it would be very important for them to communicate effectively with the employee and recognise, if need be, whether that person's impairment was putting them at a particular disadvantage within the workplace. If that was the case, they would be under an obligation to make what are called reasonable adjustments. Some examples of that might be to provide additional support or training to the employee. They might also include things like transferring perhaps more onerous duties away from that person, either on a temporary or a permanent basis.
It's an issue employers have to deal with delicately, though, isn't it, Carolyn?
I would say the key thing is to, first of all, have an open discussion with the employee and really not be afraid to say, well, look, we've recognised that there is a problem. How can we help? Reasonable adjustments are on a spectrum. You can start with very small adjustments, such as just changing someone's duties, perhaps temporarily, to a more significant change, to actually changing someone's job entirely. And the key thing is to try different things and not be afraid to try something else. And also, I don't know if it's helpful for employers to remember that they're only ever required to make adjustments that are reasonable. It doesn't have to be expensive and it doesn't have to be difficult.
Chris, what are the pitfalls, though, for employers who perhaps ignore the situation or just remain unaware of it?
At its most basic, the consequences are financial. If someone's not at their work, they're not productive, they're costing the employer money. In addition, those left behind in the workplace are covering the absent employee. They're perhaps not as productive as they should be, they're distracted, and they may also be feeling additional stress, which potentially could be avoidable. But there are also other, perhaps more significant legal consequences. Various claims can be made by an employee if an employer doesn't provide, for example, a safe working environment. If they've been negligent in some way, a claim of personal injury can be made by an employee. That can be very expensive for the employer. Also, an employee may decide to resign and claim that they've been constructively dismissed on the basis that perhaps trust and confidence has been undermined because a bullying manager hasn't been tackled or something of that kind. And also, if an employee has become so unwell as to develop a disability, they will be protected by the Disability Discrimination Act. If an employee was dismissed because they've been off sick for a reason related to a disability, or if an employer hadn't made an adjustment and as a consequence that employee hadn't been able to come back to work, then that too can give rise to a claim. And it's worth remembering that discrimination claims, there's no limit on damages that can be recovered by an employee. And similarly with personal injury claims, in the way that there is, for example, with unfair dismissal claims.
But Carolyn, can there be benefits to employers of taking a proactive stance on mental health issues?
Absolutely, there are a lot of benefits. The first is, of course, that if you are aware of the potential for employees to become stressed and to need additional support, you can deal with it earlier, you can take earlier action and prevent the problem from becoming more serious. There are also benefits in terms of increased morale, a more open atmosphere in the workplace if employees know that it's okay for them to say that they need some support.
You're listening to a podcast from the Employment, Pensions and Benefits team at McLean, Murray & Spence. The issue we're looking at is blogging, and I'm joined now by Lindsay Cartwright. Lindsay, how serious an issue is this?
It is a serious issue because of the potential damage to an employer's reputation by having an employee posting information about that employer on the internet. If people are looking for information about a company, they are likely to simply type the company name into a site such as Google. And if they come up with employees' thoughts about that employer, which the employer might not want people to see, then it could be damaging to their reputation.
What can employers do about a situation like that?
An employer would be best advised to deal with the matter in a communications policy or an email policy and to make it clear to employees what they are allowed to do in company time and whether or not they're allowed to access the internet or use blogging sites.
What if they're doing it in their own time, though?
Generally speaking, it's difficult for employers to regulate what employees do in their personal time. However, given the potential damage to their reputation, they should make it clear in a policy that something which is done in personal time could have an impact on the working relationship to the extent of taking disciplinary action against that employee. And employees really should be made aware of what is and what is not acceptable.
What if they don't have a policy?
An employer without a policy would still be able to take disciplinary action, but they'd be at increased risk of an unfair dismissal claim being successful.
How important is it then to have these guidelines and policies in place?
It's really important because if it's not set out in guidelines, then employers, generally speaking, are left with the law of defamation if there's damage to their reputation. That's notoriously difficult to pursue. And also, if it's the truth, then there's no remedy under the law of defamation.
Is this something we're going to see becoming much more of a problem in the future, do you think?
Well, statistics show that 45% of companies at the moment have workers blogging, and that's simply going to increase because people are much more familiar with the technology that the internet presents to them now. So, yes, I think it's going to be an increasing problem in the future.
If you'd like any more information on these issues, visit mms.co.uk/EPB.